I don't even know how to start. It's blistering weekend, not so much of action, but of course, action is action. We just have to go for the action. It's still the best sporting show in the whole of the universe.
It's News Instant the Sport. And my name is Adiga Adebowale. Show airing on the Bad Radio Scope on our YouTube podcast, of course, and on, of course, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can catch it up live later, anytime you want. I have the gang with me today. I have Olawale with me, and I have Shea with me. Shea, small little introduction. United winning by Ojoro.
Hello, sport fans around the world. It's a fantastic weekend again. And like Olawale said, what a fantastic Fergie time win for United over the weekend.
All right. Fergie, that's what
I'm sure Debo is waiting for me across the line. Welcome, everyone.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Olawale.
Yeah, good day, sporting fans around the world. Still on that United game. I think eventually, thank God there was VAR, because I think VAR eventually exposed human beings for who we are. I can't imagine in what world that United go yesterday, how it wasn't disqualified, how it wasn't reviewed longer by VAR, as it was just more of like, I don't know. I have to say this in Yoruba to make sense. Like, but not on this show. Don't worry.
All right, perfect. That's what you get when you're a big institution, and that's the truth. There's a difference of approach for everybody. It's like a billionaire and a poor person. The rules are not equal. We can deceive ourselves all we want. So we're going to more of the other sport first. We don't have so much. I don't know if Olawale have any basketball in this for us, realistically, but we'll start with Ngannou versus Gaines. Looks like a match for the century. In terms of African heritage and all, Ngannou did pretty well. Struggled a little bit at the third round and won by split decision. As expected, we expected him to win anyways, but this could have gone either ways. Gaines took him into the party. It wasn't bad as people would have expected him to be. Shea, now that Ngannou has won, defended his championship successfully, are we going to see that big money match against Tyson Fury? Because Tyson seems to be waiting for him, and we're talking about tens of millions of dollars or pounds, as the case might be, if not hundreds, in this particular case. And don't forget, this match was just for $600,000, so it's okay to get the big buck now.
Of course, you know, when you bring superstars together, that is exactly what you expect to see, a big money fight. Talking about Francis Ngannou, this is an undefeated heavyweight fighter in the UFC. Even though he came up against a particular determined serial gain in this last fight, which I think could have gone either way, just like you said. But that is what makes champions champions. Even when they are in a very tight match, they still have the prowess, they still have the skill to come up tops. Almost like three submission attempts by Sirigin. Even Ngannou didn't make any submission attempt in this particular fight. But yeah, that is when you know this is a champion. He did not submit to any of Gaines' tactics throughout the bout. Now, talking about Tyson Fury, I think that's just going to be a fight for the fans and, of course, for the money, because they're in two different spots. And I think it's not going to really be a fair boxing bout. So it's just for us to see two superstars and enjoy what we can see from the belt. For me, there are different fighters. I make money. Yeah, exactly. There are different fighters. I would just advise people to sit down and see. Just enjoy the belt.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Eddie, for that analysis. And of course, in the Australian Open, I was having this discussion with Alawali. The inconsistency, the level of inconsistency that we've seen in the female tennis, particularly the female tennis, over the past 4, 5, 6 years, is alarming. At a point, you see Coco Gauff, you think, oh, this will be the new Serena Williams. You see Stephen Sloan, oh, this could be the new Venus Williams. You see Naomi Osaka, oh, she could be the next Kim Clijsters. You see someone else, Sabalenka, oh, this could be a new Steffi Graf. But they just kind of hold down the consistency. As of right now, out of the top 32 players ranked in the world, we have about six of them left at the Australian Open. So we can even see a different champion this year. For all we know, we could see a new one. Olali, I'm going to come to you. Sabalenka, she's a woman after my heart. Honestly, how far do you think she can go? And can she shrug off this nerve? I know she's good, but she allows the party to get to her, especially when the nerves are setting in. How long do you think we can see Sabalenka do?
Luckily for her, this could probably be a year, considering the fact that most of the top guns are no longer in the competition, or some of them didn't participate. I think her case reminds me of Kim Clijsters in her early days. As good as she was, when it comes to the big occasion, she could win all other WTP Tour Championship, but when it comes to the major one, when she gets to the semi-final, either against Justin Haney, these are country, Justin Haney Harding?
Justin Haney,
yes, or the Serena, Venus, she can't just rise to the occasion. But with the current situation now, and the French Open, with the virtually everybody not really doing well, this could be a year. Let's see how far she can hold her nerves, just like you said, how far she can probably raise her game beyond the pressure and probably deliver. She's a very good tennis player and probably deliver the Osprey prize for herself.
And for Ashley Barkley, I don't know if she is ready for us anyways, but for Ashley Barkley, the defending champion, this, I think she could probably win this. If I'm going to root for anybody in this championship, I'm going to be rooting for Ashley. Would you do the same? Olali. Oh, okay. She is back. Okay. Shay, would you reach for
Ashley? Yes.
If you're going to root for anybody for the championship?
Definitely. Personally, for me, I think Ashley Barty should be the lady to root for. And just some couple of things I need to say about her. I think she's the most dogged out of the rest. Olawale mentioned, spoke quite well about Sabalenka, but I think Sabalenka depends more on power than skill, really. Ashley Barty combines all together. And whenever you see Ashley Barty out of a particular game, then you know that something else is happening. Probably she couldn't keep her head in the game completely. But we are talking about the power, the doggedness, ability to cover the court. She's got all this. And if you are talking about experience also, I think all these are right in the kitty for her. So I'll probably be rooting for her for Australian Open this year.
I wish Sabalenka could win for a change. I know it's going to be difficult anyways. Olali, got it straight for you now. Your favorite people, the Brits, they are all out. Dan is out. Handy is out. And looking at the male side of things right now, Godfrey Murphys is going to be playing against Berrettini for the quarterfinals. Ronaldo is going to be playing against Shapovalov. Of course, whoever wins between Mornier and Sinner is going to be playing against Thomas Fritz. The match between Thomas Fritz and Tsitsipas. That's a match to watch out for in the fourth round. Anyways, I don't know how they were up. They were paid at this stage of the match of the tournament. Mario Cilic is going to be playing against the Canadian guy Hugo Alisme, and of course, Christie is going to be playing against Danny Medvedev. I expect that to be a stroll in the path for Medvedev. Out of these names I was mentioning, do you think there's a huge chance, better chance for Nadal to get this one over across the line?
Well,
but I'm looking at it.
Of course,
but it is
whether we like it or not. With all due respect to the young guys who are really coming up in the tennis world, I think the moment the Novak Djokovic couldn't participate in the French Open, in my mind, I still think Nadal is a person to beat. Is a guy to beat. I think he's the favorite. It might not be the bookie's favorite, but you can't just rule out those experience. You can't rule out his. Yeah. I'm considering the fact that I think he has rested very well a couple of times. We know his major issue is battling with injuries, and if you notice Nadal's career towards in the past 2-3 years, anytime he has that 2-3 months rest, he comes back
with fire,
like a fire. And if he can get to the semifinal, he will sense like this is a tournament I could win. I expect him to raise his game. So I think yes. It is not far off if anybody sees Nadal as a favorite.
All right, perfect. I don't know what happened to Rublev losing, and I can't see Thames here as well, which is surprising. I can see Alexander Zverev as well. Probably he's not in the tournament to start with. I don't know. She correct me if I'm wrong. Anyways,
I think Zverev already lost. Round, so Zverev is out. But I think we should be looking out for Medvedev. He has shown, I think last season, he showed that he can actually also come to the party. When it comes to Grand Slams. So I think that should be the person to look out for, apart from Rafael Nadal. Tsitsipas, maybe. But I think Medvedev is the guy to really challenge Nadal. Otherwise, I think it's going to be a stroll for Rafael.
All right. Perfect. Thank you very much for that. We're going on a quick break right now. And when we come back, we'll be jumping straight into some serious analysis of sporting events across the world in football. Don't go anywhere, guys. Yeah, we're back. And we're back with the football part of it. And I'm going to start from something that time did not permit us to talk about last weekend. It would have been a whole lot better to talk about it last weekend when City defeated Chelsea. But of course, it's not something I'm going to wait over and not talk about. And this is it. We look at Chelsea, a front line of £220 million. We talk about the undue advantage of Pep Guardiola with City having a world-class second 11 in his team. We talk about the Liverpool that have just two world-class players off front. I'm not talking about the team in total. Off front. Without those two, Liverpool looks like they could be taken for the beating. But the comparison is actually between Chelsea and City. Olali, I'm going to start with you on this one. Do we have a gulf of difference between Chelsea and City? Or what we see is gulf of difference between the footballing brain of both coaches? Because in terms of quality, I can't see so much difference. So I'm going to start with you on this, Lali.
Yeah, now I think this is a very tricky question. This is a question that personally I've been trying to answer within myself. I've not probably gotten the right kind of answer. I think at times when you look at the at times when you look at squad, we tend to look more of the valuation of the players, not actually looking at what the quality of the player itself. A typical example is the United squad. United has not been that bad when it comes to if you look at what they have spent. You look at Maguire, it's £80 million. It's just £80 million, but who is Maguire himself? So I think the same thing probably applies to the Chelsea team, especially the forward line. I think there are some areas where the gulf in talent, I don't think is that much. But I still think getting the right balance, which at times is an indictment on the part of the coach, is what the problem with Chelsea. I think Thomas Tuchel, we have to take a bit of blame on this. I watch his team, his Dortmund team, very exciting, very close to what we saw of the, probably if not even better in time of style of play, to what Jurgen Klopp did at Dortmund. But the moment he moved to PSG, I don't know, probably the fear of losing.
Something clicked in. Something
snapped. Yeah, take a bit of, and he became a bit more pragmatic. And considering when he took over the Chelsea team, they were all over the place, especially defensively. And to be a bit fair to him, I think individually, I don't think the Chelsea centre-backs are, like, excellent. I think they work better as a three-man centre-back. It's like they defend better with the three at the back three center back and two full backs. because we have to state it, there are two full backs that operate more like wing backs. So, and one thing about 3-4-3 or 3-5-2, if you don't have some, it takes a lot away from your attacking potential. That's the truth. So we've not really, I think that 3-5-3-4-3 might be one of the things that is holding Chelsea back. On the other hand, I still think their forward players have been a bit disappointing. Ziyech, for the more to be truth, has not really shown us that quality we saw in him
at Ajax.
Christian Pulisic can't just
stay fit.
Getting injured, so we've not. He has not really had a run of games to really see what he could do. Mason Mount, for all his hard work on the pitch of play, I still think creativity,
yeah,
it's a bit lacking. And I think it's one of the problems Lukaku is having. Why Lukaku is finding difficult scoring goals. I said it at the beginning of the season that the moment the fullbacks goes dry off, Chelsea might find themselves in trouble, which I think eventually
happened when
again in those games that they couldn't keep clean sheets, a goal wasn't enough. So looking at it as a whole, I still think the Man City team in terms of quality is they have the edge. The difference might not be
that much.
The gap is not really that much. But like you said, Thomas Tuchel's approach probably we have to change in terms of getting a bit of style that could make them a bit more creative and that could allow them to get to the what do you call it?
The best out of the squad.
Out of these players.
Yeah, get you better. Understand.
I believe in as much as they are not as good as the City team, I believe even if they could not beat City head-to-head, I still think they have a team that could rival City and Liverpool in terms of We've seen season whereby you lose it to a team, but you still probably beat them to the league. So yeah, I believe they have that 100%. Kind of team that could probably rival, what do you call it, City. Unfortunately, a lot of factors, a lot of things have happened this season, which you can't really discount completely, that will probably let me give Thomas Tuchel another year to see what he could do with this team. But for now,
I feel
tactically it's lacking again, but the squad too, I think, is a bit overrated, especially the forward guys.
I agree with you on some points. I disagree with you on some, of course. For me, I feel I start to be corrected anyways, but I feel for the back line, like you said, I agree with you 100%. They play better with a three center back. But I've seen teams that don't have, I've seen Gribehens pairing, I've seen Evra pairing a Vidic or something in the middle, in the center defense for Manchester United. I've seen a center defense pairing of Sandy Ross and Yuan Juru coming second in the league. Maybe the league was not this competitive, to be factual, but they came second, got to quarterfinals of the Champions League. So I strongly feel the only reason why, if I'm the owner of Chelsea right now, I'm not sacking Tuchel is because there's no better alternative outside there. Otherwise, we are seeing the same thing that we saw with Lamps two seasons ago. Lamps was excellent with Chelsea, took them to the FA Cup final, took them to top four. They bought in the players, he does not know what to do with them. Tuchel came in, puts in a makeshift stuff to it, a stopgap to it. Okay, let's play five at the back, but this cannot last forever because we are going to get bored of this back five in the long run. Shea, I'm going to come to you now. I'm going to compare the red side of Manchester and the blue side. The red side are probably one of the best strikers that we've ever seen in this world. They have a CR World Cup winner in Varane. Lindelof, for all people say about him, I still think he's a good central defender. Maybe not Harry Maguire so much, because Harry Maguire a couple of seasons ago was playing with All City. That was relegated. So we don't expect so much footballing brain from him, so to speak. But because he's English, hey, you can buy him for me for £80 million. Luke Shaw is not that bad. He's not that bad. It might not be so excellent, but it's not that bad. I'm wondering why Manchester United will allow Lucas Digne to go to Aston Villa when they are not convinced about Luke Shaw. So comparing the both teams, David De Gea have gotten more shots on target, saved over 80 shots saved, and the other guy at the blue side of Manchester has faced just 99 shots over the past two seasons on target. So I don't see so much of gulf of difference between the two teams. Bruno Fernandes, for all the way that he loses the ball, is still an excellent playmaker. You can't take that away from him. Cavani might be old, he might not have the legs like we know, but Cavani is still a very, very, very good striker. I know people are antagonizing Rashford, Bryce. I'll still take Rashford over Greenwood any day, anytime. You know, so I don't see so much gulf of difference between the two teams. City, definitely better. Definitely. Because of a particular Pep. If Pep was not in City, Pep is only Manchester United. We'll be talking about, Manchester United is like the best team right now. I will be comparing them with maybe class 07-08. Shea, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Debo. This is quite an interesting topic, talking about the gulf of difference between the red side and the blue side of Manchester. I think the gulf of difference is actually Pep Guardiola. When Olawale was talking about Chelsea team and the Man City team also, I feel that consistency in terms of the coaching is actually the gulf of difference between these two clubs in terms of Chelsea and Man City. Let me come back to the Manchester teams. Now, the issue is Pep Guardiola has been with this same team over a long period of years. He has made, some buys, even ones that we can question. He just loaned out, or he just released this guy, I think Eric Garcia and Torres back to Barcelona. But the point is, he has done a fantastic job in terms of recreating his team. He has a particular way he plays that suits the particular players he brings to the club. Now, if you're talking about the wing backs of Pep Guardiola, they are wing backs, and trust me, they are also central midfielders. If you notice the way he plays, and that is why, yes, and that is why it is very hard for the young, the man at the goalpost to be actually facing 66 goals, and in particular, David De Gea is facing 82 in just one season. That is the difference. What happens is that the likes of Bernardo Silva provide, even with any time they go to the width, the Cancelos drop to the midfield. So at every time a Bernardo Silva or a Sterling loses ball, the midfield is still there, choked. And that is the way he has played over the years and keeps, keeps the pressure on the other team, and he keeps the possession of the ball. So that is why, I was listening to someone today. The person's opinion is that Ruben Diaz is not so, so fantastic because Man City actually plays a positional football. And it's only a few times that the defenders really face the tough times. I think that is a point.
100%.
But I think the goal for difference is just the coach.
The match, the
Pep Guardiola, yes, the way he sets up his team and the way he has also recreated his players over the years. He lost the spine of his team like 2 years ago and actually brought other players to come in to address that. Talking about Kompany, Silva, and Aguero. He has not replaced Aguero now, but Pep Guardiola is one of the coaches, if not the only coach in the world, that is going to win a league without a known striker. So that is the difference between the two teams. If you look at the red side, it's as if every day you see confusion, inconsistency, and a lot of average players on the pitch collecting unnecessary money.
Exactly.
All right, perfect. Olali, I'm going to come to you now. I'm going to come back to you. And this is an issue that I know we discuss off the air, but it's something that we need to recreate so people will learn. People tend to think Guardiola plays only attacking football, but he actually plays the best defensive attacking football. The way Guardiola teams mark the spaces is, my word, it's different. It's out of this world. They lose possessions, they do. Not so often. And when they do, they take it back, like almost immediately. It's a spine. And I'm not trying to elogize Guardiola. I'm not his best fan. Don't get me wrong, guys. For anyone that is listening, I'm not elogizing Guardiola. I'm not his best fan. I still feel Jurgen Klopp is better than him. But we have to give respect to whom respect is due to. Olali.
Yeah, well, the truth is, football, just like any other thing in life, keep evolving every time. And sometimes your ability to be creative and trying to do something new. For Guardiola, just like what you said, they defend. It's not like Guardiola players work hard a lot. That's something people don't realize. And that's why when you talk about Manchester, if Guardiola was probably being in Manchester, a lot of players would not be there today.
100%.
Now, Yeah, but not now, because you have to work a lot. It starts from the front. Like you said, they do a lot of practice. They form a lot of triangles. They block all the passing channels. They want to force you to do things that you are not comfortable
doing. Yeah,
that is how they play. They defend, but they don't defend sitting deep or with a low block.
Yeah.
They want to have the ball.
Okay,
and exactly. I think the major thing is control, control, control. And which, for I think one thing we probably are overlooking in the City team is majority of their players, they are not just good players. They are very intelligent. Now, Tarek Lamptey has all the pace, has all those things at the right. Is he as intelligent as Kyle Walker or Cancelo? I don't think so. Is he as intelligent like Reece James? I don't think so. Rashford with all those running, is he as smart as a good
Riyad Mahrez?
Riyad Mahrez, a Bernardo Silva. You see those guys when they take this. So those are the other things. I think one thing that goes for Guardiola is the way he picks his players. In as much as the money is available for him, he spends the money right.
Right.
I think which is the key thing. He plays defensive game. Fine, but his defensive game is not by sitting deep. It's
an attacking passing. Defensive game. If you're exactly. If you're not a good football watcher, you will not understand that it's defensive.
You will not understand it. There is no way you can win football without defending.
Exactly.
I would
I'll gladly just put in what Arsene Wenger said. I know you remember the year because they are good with years. I think 2012 with the Spanish team at the Euro Cup. I'm not sure it was 2012 anyways, but I think
it's 2012. They played the kind of boring.
They played defensive.
They would deny you the ball.
The ball. So it was negative. What Spain did was negative. But in the reverse, what Guardiola does is not negative. He's on the front foot. He's attacking.
Yes.
But he's keeping the ball. So it wasn't a negative tiki-taka. So you can actually play tiki-taka negatively, like a new Serenke. But it did not. Anyways, just before we double down to that, I think we have 6 minutes left on the timer right now before we jump into something else. Cristiano Ronaldo's opera. Ronaldo was removed against Brentford, and we're like, why not the younger players? We've seen Ronaldo do this over the course of his career. I don't think a 37-year-old would change anyways. But my question is Ralf Rangnick sensible enough to come to the press to talk about these things? Is he sensible enough to say Martial doesn't want to play for Manchester United, and 2 days afterwards said they had a misunderstanding of what he said? I think I stand to be correct. I think he talks too much. I don't know if you guys agree with me, but I feel he talks too much. There are some things that are to be addressed in press, and there are some things to be addressed in the dressing room, and this is one of them. Because honestly, unless Ronaldo is an unpopular figure in the dressing room, criticizing him in the press might turn the dressing room against you. Olali.
Yeah, if 2 days earlier you said this guy doesn't want to play, and 2 days after you said there's a bit of misunderstanding, that means there is something not too clear there. That means the coach has to do better. I think he's a bit naive when it comes to the English press. Probably the Germans are a bit sincere.
Approach. Yeah.
They would take whatever you say for what it is without probing.
And trying to twist whatever it is to say to them.
So I think he has to understand the British press. That's the headquarter of paparazzi. They just want to create a story out of everything.
Out of nothing.
I, on his own part, you have to learn how to undo some things indoor. It's a big time coach. I'm surprised he's probably being naive and such thing like
exactly.
this. Probably it's an indictment of the fact that he has not probably coached a very big squad, a team like United before. You can't keep doing this, going front and back, saying everything to the press. You have to learn to, if you can see Mr. Arteta or even Mr. Holy. Mr. Oli will be smiling as much as we don't really like his tactical this thing. he'll be killing you and we'll be still be smiling. He'll be telling you are the most hardworking player in this
thing. In the training.
He understands your frustration. He understands he as a player, wasn't getting enough playing time. it will make everything look okay. So at times you just have to do that, even if it is not okay. It's just like you come to social media, like me going to social media and telling people about all my problem.
Exactly.
No, people will not help me. They will listen and laugh. That's
yeah, exactly. They will make a case out of it.
Out of it. So at the end of the day, I will come back. I will come out of it. So I think it needs to learn. That's not how to handle things.
All right. Perfect. Thank you very much for that. Shay, I'm going to come to you. Mr. Jimmy Carragher, he won the Champions League. So I'm not going to abuse him too much.
Champions League winner, UEFA Cup winner.
UEFA Cup winner. And he has
FA Cup winner.
And FA Cup trophy. So I'm not going to abuse him too much. I don't want to go down the route of Rafa Benitez this weekend. But of course, he came out to say Messi is not a great signing for PSG. And Messi came out to call Jimmy Carragher a donkey. Do you think Jimmy Carragher deserved what Messi said?
I think Carragher is a pundit and he's entitled to whatever he says. I think Messi should have just waved away the comment because it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop until we see something, magical from Messi for PSG. And if you are saying magical, not really in the French league that we call the Farmers League, we are talking about the Champions League.
Well, the guy who just scored Messi, from second round to the final of the Champions League.
Exactly. What Messi needs to put in the DM to Carragher is the Champions League, wearing PSG. What's it called? Shit. So yeah. I think that's the best way to respond to the likes of Carragher. He's done a lot in the English league, and most times he actually speaks the truth. Maybe about Manchester United.
But Jamie cannot handle truth himself. I remember he's speaking as a young guy because the guy accused him of I don't know. I can't remember. And that was like last year.
I think that's a human being in him. Let us give you a pass on him. That.
We should give him a pass.
Exactly. Right? And that was okay. That in those days anyway.
No, it wasn't so, those days. It was like last year.
Like
2 years ago. He's still at the young boy. What? But it goes around calling everybody not green signing. Anyways. okay. I'm going to talk about. I don't even want to talk about it, honestly. Unless Olawale forces me to. Do you want to talk about it? Nigeria Tunisia game?
Let's talk about it, yes.
Oh, okay. Anyways, okay. The good thing, let's talk about the good thing. We have the fixtures for the FIFA playoff for the World Cup.